Thanks for introduction and for invitation. I will talk today about single electron topography of the quantum Hall liquid with what we call a movable quantum dot. This work has been performed in the lab of Ray Ashuri at MIT. Paul Glykofridis was a graduate student who has been working on this project. And that's myself, as Joe told, I've moved to Duke recently. Samples for this work, the gallium arsenide wafers, were grown by Mansoor Shagin and Mike Melick. And I've also greatly benefited from multiple discussions with Leonard Levitov at MIT. I'll first give a brief introduction, mostly discussing our sample and the method of scanning capacitive microscopy, which we use to study the quantum Hall sample. And then I'll present as a first example of using our technique, I'll first show imaging of incompressible strips in the quantum Hall liquid. And then the main part of the talk, I'll discuss single electron topography of the random disorder potential by creating a scannable movable quantum dot inside the quantum Hall liquid, and then using it as a single electron sensor inside the quantum Hall liquid. So our sample is a standard gallium arsenide, aluminum gallium arsenide heterojunction. So two-dimensional electron gas is formed here as a heter interface between gallium arsenide substrate and aluminum gallium arsenide overlayer. The thing to keep in mind is that aluminum gallium arsenide layer, which is some thousand angstrom thick, is nominally insulating, which prevents the use of conventional scanning tunneling microscopy on this sort of samples. In recent years, several groups have overcome this difficulty by using either modified atomic force microscope that was done at Westerwelle's group in Harvard and in Paul McKinnon's group in Berkeley. Alternatively, people have used a scannable single electron transistor, as it was done in the group in the labs. And we have used a scanning capacitive microscopy, which I'm going to discuss in details in the next view graph. We scan a sharp metal tip just on top of the two-dimensional electron gas, some 100 to 200 angstrom above the surface. And we apply a tiny AC excitation to the two-dimensional electron gas through the ohmic contact. Due to capacitive coupling between the two-dimensional electron gas and the scanning tip, a certain AC current is induced on the scanning tip. This AC current is proportional to the capacitance between the two-dimensional electron gas and the scanning tip. Now, the geometry of this drawing might be somewhat misleading. So that would be more close to reality. We should think about a fairly blunt tip, which has a fairly sharp angle. And that distance is some 1,000 angstrom, this is some 200 angstrom, and the apex of the tip might be fairly blunt to increase capacitive coupling. Now, some of our samples, in addition, have a metal gate electrode evaporated on the surface. So the gate is shaped in a set of long and narrow fingers, and we apply the same AC excitation to the two-dimensional electron gas and to the gate. So now when the scanning tip is on top of the gate, the capacitance signal is going to be fairly large because the distance between the scanning tip and the gate is small. And when the scanning tip is on top of the bare gallium arsenide region, the distance is larger and capacitance is going to be smaller. So here I present an image of a region between two fingers of the gates. The gates show up here as bright region, the capacitive signal here is color-coded, so high signal corresponds to bright colors, low signal corresponds to dark colors. And you see that the gallium arsenide region is shown here in dark, corresponding to a lower capacitance signal. And later on, we are going to zoom in those regions in between the fingers of the gate and see some details of the signal in that region. Now, one more detail, the experiment is performed at 0.3 Kelvin and a high magnetic field up to 10 Tesla. So, the first project to be discussed is measurements of... we use frequencies from kilohertz to 100 kilohertz. The best signal is measured at highest frequency because the noise of the amplification circuit decreases with frequency. In most what I'm going to discuss today, the signal is dominated by capacitance. In principle, you might have different reasons for observing signal. You might have variations of the resistivity of a two-dimensional electron gas. In that case, you will have in-phase and phase-lagging signal, which will have some structure, different structure over the imaged region. And I don't think I'll have time for that today. Now, in most what I'm going to discuss today, the in-phase signal is either non-existent or is identical to the in-phase and phase-lagging signal look identical, which means that somewhere in our effective circuit, we have a fairly large resistance, like a resistance of a two-dimensional electron gas. And therefore, our RC gives us a certain shift, certain phase rotation. But otherwise, we do not have any resistive components on local scales. So that is why we could talk about capacitive microscopy. Alternative name for this technique was charge accumulation imaging to somewhat indicate that you measure how the charge in the electron gas is induced by this AC excitation. Now, we study a region of a two-dimensional electron gas where there is a density gradient so that for example, in high magnetic field, we would have a filling factor of less than one on the left and filling factor greater than one on the right. It shows the lowest Landau level and the next Landau level. Energies as a function of coordinate. And in between, the Fermi energy spans the cyclotron gap, and the two-dimensional electron gas has a gap in the density of states, which results in suppressed electron screening, which is manifested here by non-zero electric field, which results in this gradient of this band bending. So in the region of the incompressible strip, electron density is constant, corresponding to completely filled integer number of Landau levels and other Landau levels being completely empty. I show that schematically here, this flat region in density versus coordinate graph. And as we are going to apply our small AC excitation, electron density in that region is going to stay constant. So our effective capacitance between that region of electron gas and the scanning tip is going to be zero or suppressed. A number of regional theoretical works and the first experimental observation are listed on the bottom of the view graph. Let me actually skip. Here I present a graph from one of the original theoretical papers, the incompressible strips. Thanks. The incompressible strips are usually discussed in the context of the edge of the sample where electron density drops from its bulk value towards zero, and then when the electron density hits exactly integer filling, before the electron gas is supposed to form incompressible strips. Incompressible strips run parallel to the edge of the sample and perpendicular to the density gradient. In our experiment, the geometry is somewhat different. We create a density bump in the middle of the sample, and as magnetic field is tuned to a proper value, incompressible strips should form surrounding this density maximum and forming those rings at a level of constant electron density. We expect to observe this ring in our scanning capacitive measurement as a region of suppressed capacitive signal. So the scale is going to be of the order of 10 microns. It's maybe 6 microns in diameter, so a typical images would be 10. The diameter is fairly large, and the width of the strip is going to be typically around a micron. So the strip, of the order of a micron. Yes, that distance would be of the order of 10 microns, say, and the width is going to be of the order of a micron. So our resolution is typically around 300 angstrom, 300 nanometers, so about 3 to maybe 6 times smaller than the width of the strip. I'm going to discuss the width of the strip in details and compare that with theory. Typically, the depth of the electron gas. If you think about this capacitance coupling between even a point-like tip to a plane which is separated by some 1,000 angstrom, then the resolution of this measurement is going to be given by the depth of the electron gas. And in experiment, we sometimes see some sharp features. I don't have time to go into that in details, but we have, say, boundaries between a region which charges very well and the region that does not charge. And then as you scan the tip across this region, you're supposed to see a step which is somewhat smeared due to this response function of the tip. And then by taking the derivative of the step, we could figure out what has been our response function. And that is typically 3,000 angstrom full width at half maximum, and the depth of the electron gas is 1,000 angstrom. So it's a few times larger than the depth of the electron gas. Now, in this first part of the talk, we need to prepare a density gradient, and we do so by bringing the scanning tip in contact with the surface and applying a fairly large voltage of the scanning tip for a short while, for a few seconds. This induces a tunneling current through a nominally insulating aluminum gallium arsenide layer and ionizes some of the electrons still trapped in the donor layer. This results in a charge transfer from those donors into the two-dimensional electron gas. And due to the local electron neutrality, electrons don't spread laterally, but keep close to the parent donors. So as a result, we have a density gradient on the scale of this about 10 microns. And now as we switch off the voltage that has been applied to the scanning tip, we can scan in the capacitance mode and measure local capacitance between the tip and electron gas on the slopes of this density bump. As we apply high magnetic field, we'll observe the incompressible strips forming those rings surrounding the maximum density maximum. And as I said, the incompressible strip is going to show up in dark colors, which corresponds to a suppressed capacitance signal. And the reason for that is that density of states suppresses the capacitance. So here is one of the fairly old pieces of data. We indeed observe incompressible strings forming the rings surrounding the density perturbation. The scale of the size of each scanning window here is 10 microns, so you could see that diameter of those rings is about 6 microns. Again, the color map is going from low signals being dark to high signals being bright. And it is also visible that as we change magnetic field, the diameter of those rings shrink. And that is easy to understand is if we recall the degeneracy of each Landau level is proportional to magnetic field. And as we increase magnetic field, the density corresponding to an exactly integer filling should grow, and incompressible strips should move up the density gradient, which results in them shrinking towards the center of perturbation. In this specific example, the filling factor is 4, so we could figure out what is electron density at those locations, knowing magnetic field. And we could retrieve the density profile created in that region. In particular, we might extract the density gradient, which will be needed to compare this measurement with theory. Here I show some cross sections through the incompressible strip. So you should think about signal measured along a single line across a density maximum. We see that capacitance signal has those suppressed regions where tip to sample capacitance is small. What is important is that this capacitance signal at the strip location is not suppressed all the way to zero. Now, to give some intuition, if we consider tip and sample as two plates of a parallel plate capacitor, we expect the usual parallel plate capacitor formula to be modified in the following way due to a non-infinite density of state in the electron gas. So when density of states is infinite, we recover the usual parallel plate capacitor formula, but when the density of states is zero, whole capacitance is going to be zero. So either density of state is zero, electron gas does not charge, and we would expect to see a non-zero, and we would expect to have a zero capacitance signal. Now, in our case, we obviously observe that capacitance signal is suppressed, but not all the way to zero, which indicates the presence of a non-zero density of states inside the incompressible strip. And this is, of course, a very well-known fact that due to the disorder, the nominally infinitely narrow Landau levels get broadened, and also we acquire some non-zero density of state inside the cyclotron gap itself. What is new in our experiment is that we observe this non-zero density of states on a local scale, which is sometimes less than 1 micron. So inside the incompressible strips themselves, the density of states is not zero, which results in a non-zero capacitance signal. We could estimate the density of states to be some 1 to 10% of the value at zero magnetic field, which is consistent with bulk experiments.
Can you explain why, in fact, the states are localized? It's okay for the measurement. The sensitivity also to localize things.
Yeah, I would think that since we see no resistivity components in the measurement, the states should charge fairly effectively. So we could, of course, think that, well, they all are that localized that we would not be able to see them at all at our frequency. But you would rather expect that the states, if states would be there, you would have then is it all completely charged during our long time scales, or if there would be some of them that would not be charged due to a long time scale that is required, then you would have a whole spectrum of those states. Some of them would be charged. Some of them would be comparable to your excitation cycle, and then you would see them as showing up in your resistance. I think that. Resistance here does not play much role, because I know some other cases when it plays a role. You might have a situation where, say, all this interior region would not be charging. Sometimes you would have this showing as a dark disk, and you would know from the phase lagging signal that you have a very resistive strip surrounding the center. So I think that is not the case in the data presented. So another piece of information we could extract from the measurement is the width of the incompressible strip. I compare it here to the theoretical expression from paper Shklovsky and Glasman. We know in this formula, of course, we know the electric constant and h bar omega cyclotron. We also know the density gradient as measured from the motion of the incompressible strips in the, as we change magnetic field. So from this formula, the expected width of the strip is about half a micron, and the measured width of the strip is 2 microns. So that is our expectation, and that is our experimental result. I've chosen on purpose the widest strip we have seen. Typically, they are always wider than the theoretically expected result. But in this case, there is no question on possible resolution limited effects and things like that. So we definitely could see that the width of the strip is much larger than expected from theory. Now, we could bring a very simple explanation on why the strips are might be expected to become broader than predicted by theory. We could roughly estimate the width of the strip from the following argument: the width of the strip times electric field inside the strip times electric charge should be of the order of h bar omega cyclotron. Basically, this electric field present in the inside the incompressible strip should result in bending of the Landau levels, so that Landau level will be aligned with the lower Landau, Fermi energy will be aligned with the lower Landau level on the left and with the next Landau level on the right. Now, we have just seen that there is a non-zero density of states inside the incompressible strip. So as a result, there should be screening, and knowing the density of states from the previous measurement, we could estimate the screening length, and we figure out that the screening length is definitely much smaller than the observed width of the strip. So as a result, the electron screening inside the incompressible strip should modify the picture and modifies the expressions that were derived assuming a zero density of states inside the strip. That would result in the decrease of electric field present in the incompressible strip, and due to small electric field, the width of the strip should become larger. Density of states is estimated from capacitance, and we have this range of 1 to 10% of density of states at zero magnetic field. And then I just estimate that knowing density of states, I know the screening lengths. So here I've quoted the density of states, and that is derived from the depths of those minima, knowing roughly the geometry of our tip. Actually, the parallel plate geometry is not that bad to describe the tip. We could figure out the capacitance signal as a function of separation between the tip and the surface. And since our tip is blunted on purpose, it's not, you know, atomically sharp at the end, it has a fairly flat apex, so that this approximation of flat parallel plate capacitor is not meaningless. Something like hundreds of attofarads. One femtofarad would be micron by micron gate separated by thousand angstrom from electron gas. So hundreds of attofarads would be, say, 3,000 angstrom by 3,000 angstrom. And you should also recall that there are contributions from capacitance like that. In general, the signal is sitting on top of a very large capacitance background coming from all possible wires and the rest of the scanning tip and so on. Then you could measure the capacitance signal as a function of distance. And you see that there is a portion of capacitance that drops very fast, which corresponds to the capacitance of the region which are located close to the surface. And then when you move them away, capacitance drops. So we have some feeling on the shape of the tip, and we also know that we have blunted it on purpose to increase the signal. We could discuss that later on if it's of interest. So just to finish up with this part of the talk, we have observed the high density of states inside the incompressible strip, and the strips were found a few times wider than predicted by theory that assumes a zero density of state inside the cyclotron gap. And we find those two facts interrelated. The presence of a non-zero density of states inside the incompressible strip helps to account for the broadening of the strip. And there are two recent theoretical papers that were discussing this situation. Now, I switch now to a completely different experiment, where we attempt to measure the random electrostatic potential inside the two-dimensional electron gas in the quantum Hall regime. We do that by forming what we call a mobile quantum dot inside the quantum Hall liquid, and then we use a mobile quantum dot as an electrometer to sense the random electrostatic potential. I need to delineate between the previous experiment and this new experiment I want to discuss. So first of all, in the previous experiment, we have created this density bump, which was permanent. Basically, it was there until the sample is warmed up. And the scale of this density bump was 10 microns. In the experiment I'm planning to discuss now, we do not pass any tunneling current through the sample. So nominal electron density is more or less flat. We apply positive voltage on the scanning tip so to attract a certain electron density bump inside the sample. Now, this density bump has a scale of a few hundred angstrom. A few thousand angstrom, a few hundred nanometers, much smaller than what we had there. Now, this density bump is not permanent. It is there only while positive voltage is applied to the scanning tip. If we switch off this voltage, the density here will be flat again. If we move the scanning tip from this location to another location, the density bump will follow the tip position. There is also some difference. This second sample is of higher quality and lower electron density. Now we again apply magnetic field such that filling factor everywhere in the sample is less than U equals 1, and then somewhere under the scanning tip, the electron density is corresponding to nu greater than 1. We scan the tip around and measure capacitance signal, and that is the result of a typical experiment. Capacitance signal here oscillates, as could be seen from those alternating bright and dark contours. I remind that our color map is monotonic one, so the signal here goes from high to low, etc. So if you make a cross section of one of such features, the signal is going to oscillate up and down. Now, periodic signal was immediately a hint of the Coulomb blockade for us. And
the resolution is better than?
The resolution is better than possible resolution you could have for resolving something inside the electron gas. It is sometimes less than 1,000 angstrom, less than the depth of electron gas. But that is readily understandable. I will need to explain some more things and then return to this question. Yes? Sorry? Right.
This bump always follows the tip.
Well, basically, this I'm going to discuss in the next few graphs. But the density bump forms something like a quantum dot, and then your capacitance signal is modulated by the Coulomb blockade effect in this dot.
So,
okay. The density bump always follows the tip position. That's correct. And then you always drag this quantum dot with you.
So
that is capacitance signal, which you could measure in spite of having a large DC voltage applied to the scanning tip. You measure AC response to measure the capacitance while having a certain DC background to create this density modulation. So apply tiny AC voltage, trying to increase electron density in that region, on top of having a large DC voltage which creates a whole density bump. So you try to sort of slightly inflate or deflate this density bump with your AC excitation.
I think it's a good question about the
mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. That is a tough question. Basically, I need to say some words on why do we think that measures something relevant to the random electrostatic potential, and what are the limitations? Yes, I think the answer will be on separation of the scales, and you could argue with that, but I will try to say that the lateral scale of the potential that we measure is much larger than that created by the scanning tip. So basically, you think about creating a very tiny well, very narrow and deep well inside a long-range potential, and that tiny well, this narrow well, would not significantly perturb this long-range potential, which is formed on larger scales, but rather measures what is its local amplitude. But that will be somewhere, further towards the end. I need to justify the Coulomb blockade statement and what exactly happens here. So I don't need to dwell much on here. Usual Coulomb blockade cartoon. Usually we have two tunneling leads connected to a central island and one electrostatic gate that controls the number of electrons in the quantum dot. It is also possible to measure Coulomb blockade having only one tunneling lead, as was done by Ashuri and co-workers in the beginning of 90s. Here, the capacitance between the gate and the quantum dot, and between the gate and the lead through the quantum dot is measured, and the capacitance signal is modulated by Coulomb blockade effect in the quantum dot. Basically, when the number of electrons in the dot is fixed, when we apply AC excitation to the lead, number of electrons here does not change, so there is no image charge induced on the gate, and we observe zero capacitance signal. When a single electron could go back and forth between the quantum dot and the lead, so that the number of electrons in the dot changes between n and n plus 1, there will be an image charge going back and forth in the gate, resulting in an alternating current that could be detected. So capacitance signal versus gate voltage would look exactly like the familiar conductivity picture. Peaks at the degeneracy points and then zeros at Coulomb blockade valleys. Now, our geometries, we could understand that our geometry is somewhat similar to this one. We have spin down Landau level, which is partially filled everywhere in the sample. And under the scanning tip, we have few electrons of the opposite spin on the upper spin sublevel. So the scanning tip here serves as a gate electrode that controls the number of electrons in the quantum dot. And most of the electron gas here serves as a tunneling contact. If we measure the capacitance between the tip and the quantum dot as a function of tip voltage, we observe that first the capacitance is suppressed when we have nu equals 1 region under the scanning tip and we have incompressible quantum Hall liquid. And then we have those oscillations which occur each time an extra electron enters the quantum dot. So those values correspond to an integer number of electrons in the dot. And we could understand the presence of the tunneling barrier in this picture if we recall the incompressible strip. Here shows schematically the lambda level energies as a function of coordinate through the center of the quantum dot. In the leads, we have partially filled lowest lambda level, then we have incompressible strip with an exactly integer filling, and then we have nu greater than 1 in the dot itself. Now for an electron to leave or enter the quantum dot, it needs to change its orbital position and also to flip its spin. And that process is apparently suppressed, resulting in a fairly small conductance between the quantum dot and the leads. Classically, you might think about an analogy with the Kerbina geometry. We try to push electrons inside this dot in a radial fashion, but due to vanishing longitudinal conductivity, it is very difficult to get electron from nu less than 1 into nu greater than 1 region. This possible analogy with few experiments, which I don't have time to discuss, unfortunately. Now, just to explain why does this Coulomb blockade reveals itself in measurements, in scanning measurements, we might consider a situation when we move this quantum dot, shown schematically here, density profile as a function of coordinate, from one location to another location. And let us say electrostatic potential is different in those positions. And here we have 2 electrons in the dot. There we have 3 electrons in the dot. Somewhere in between, we'll hit the degeneracy point between 2 and 3 electrons on the dot. Now, as we apply AC voltage, electron goes back and forth between the dot and the lead, resulting in a large capacitance signal. So our capacitance signal in that region as we move the scanning tip from there to here is going to go from valley to a peak and then to a valley again. So our signal in our color map would go from dark to bright and then to dark again. A picture like that would correspond to a hill or a well in our random electrostatic potential. As we drag the quantum dot on top of this potential hill, the number of electrons is decreasing. Electrons leave the dot one by one, resulting in oscillating signal. Now, as we go surrounding this density maximum along the equipotential curves, the number of electrons stays constant, which results in following a single dark or bright contour. Hence the word single electron topography that was used in the title. Just a few measurements to justify this picture. Most natural one is to switch off the voltage applied to the tip. In that case, we expect that the density bump will first decrease and then go below nu equals 1. And indeed, we observe that as we switch off the voltage applied to the scanning tip, the single electron features, those contours, first start to fade away and then completely disappear when there is no electric field between the tip and the sample. Another way to kill those single electron features is to change the applied magnetic field. As we decrease magnetic field, the level of nu equals 1 goes lower and lower until it finally is reached everywhere in the sample and incompressible strip that forms the tunneling barrier disappears. So we still have the density bump, but we do not have the incompressible strip to define the tunneling barrier. Indeed, we see that the single electron features disappear rather sharply towards the middle of the quantum Hall plateau. Just to summarize that part of the talk, we have formed electron droplet inside the two-dimensional electron gas, which in the presence of high magnetic field serves as a mobile quantum dot, the incompressible strips that surround the quantum dot form a tunneling barrier, and we are able to detect the change in the number of electrons in the dot with a sensitivity of about 1/100 of an electron per second. Now, a few more experiments that we could do with this object. Here I show images from a different region in the sample that were taken as a function of both tip-to-sample voltage along the horizontal axis and magnetic field along the vertical axis. We could see that changing tip-to-sample voltage results in changing of the size of those single electron contours, which mark lines of constant electrostatic potential. Changing magnetic field changes the size of those contours as well. I hope you could see maybe here that those contours shrink. Now, interestingly, the images along the diagonals look fairly much alike. You see that this contour stays about the same. I'm showing same images on the next view graph. We could actually really tune the changes in magnetic field and the tip voltages, so the images look almost identical. So here we change both magnetic field and tip to sample voltage, but the size and the shape of those single electron contours stays about the same. While if we were changing only one of those parameters, the images would look completely different. Now that could be readily understood if we recall that magnetic field, as we increase magnetic field, the level corresponding to nu equals 1 grows. So the number of electrons on the lower lambda level grows, and the number of electrons on the upper spin sublevel correspondingly decreases. To restore, so that acts to sort of deplete the quantum dot from electrons. We could increase the tip-to-sample voltage back to restore the same number of electrons in the dot. And that is indeed the way it works. As we go to higher and higher magnetic field, we need higher and higher tip-to-sample voltage. The same single electron features are observed at nu equals 1 and nu equals 2. I'm going to show nu equals 2 features later on. And we could check that at nu equals 2, we need twice as much voltage per same change in magnetic field to restore, to keep the images identical. And that is easily understood if we recall that in case of nu equals 2, we have twice as much change in the lambda in the electron density because we have two lambda levels, and thus we need twice larger voltage to keep the same number of electrons in the dot. Yes. Yes, you could trace development of those features. Actually, that will be in the next figure, as a direction, whether it's potential minimum or potential maximum. You could see in which directions the contrast change, and you could see whether it's maximum or minimum. You could also quantify the scale of the potential, but that that requires some discussion. I'm going to show it in a second. So we could use the same argument of change of electron density on the lowest lambda level as we change magnetic field to see that while mostly the features we observe in our images are the same, we see some circles around that region and some circles around this region. As we change magnetic field, the exact phase at which the single electron oscillations show up is different. For example, here we have maximum at the center, we have this bright dot, while here we have minimum at the center, we have the dark dot. So changing magnetic field by that amount changes the phase a certain number of electrons was expelled from the quantum dot, and we are now having a Coulomb blockade valley instead of a degeneracy point. But now as we change magnetic field a little bit more, we restore this high signal at the center of this feature. So that feature and that feature now looks very much alike, similar in that case. Moreover, if we count the single electron oscillations, we will see 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 oscillations in that case, and we'll see 1, 2, 3, and 4 fourth oscillation is barely visible in this case. So as a result of changing magnetic field by 0.15 Tesla, we have expelled exactly one electron from the quantum dot. This allows us to estimate the area of the quantum dot. The argument is again simple. As we thread one flex quantum through the area of the dot, we add one electron to the lower spin sublevel, and thus we deplete the upper spin sublevel. So that allows, area times one flex quantum should result in changing one electron, so that is one flux quantum per area of the quantum dot. And we find that the area of the quantum dot is about 3 times 100 nanometers squared, which is consistent with the depths of the electron gas from the surface. Now, there was a question about electron density or electrostatic potential. We could say that in these features, which I've been showing for a while, the center of those contours correspond to a larger electron density or minimum of electron density or minimum of electrostatic potential. Because as we increase the voltage applied on the scanning tip, the single electron features first are formed at the center, and then they expand towards the outside of the image, which indicates that electrostatic potential there is higher, and we need a larger tip-to-sample voltage to bring electrons inside the quantum dot in those outside locations. Now, we could also roughly estimate the scale of this potential, the amplitude, vertical amplitude of this potential, by saying that the width of the single electron peak is perhaps given by the usual 3.5 kT, which is in our case about 0.1 millielectron volts. We could measure the width of our single electron peaks and then see how much voltage do we need to apply to form a certain peak at that location or at this location. And from this argument, we estimate the amplitude of random potential to be of the order of 1 millielectron volt. Now, there is, of course, a question that Leone has asked earlier about whether this measurement is an accurate measurement of the amplitude of electrostatic potential when we obviously create a fairly large local perturbation. And I think that the measurement is obviously sensitive to the random electrostatic potential. And in some cases, when we see that main features that we observe occur on the scales much larger than our resolution, we see that in this case, separation between those typical maxima of potential is of the order of 1 micron. So I should have said those images are 2 microns in size. So this distance is 0.5 micron, 2 micron in size. And the quantum dot size is 0.3 microns. So I think that the perturbation created by the scanning tip is, of course, deep, but fairly short scale. So it should, to a certain extent, measure the random electrostatic potential. Now, another information we could extract from here is the lateral scale of the potential. Now, the thing to watch for is not the separation between the neighboring peaks, because the separation between neighboring peaks of Coulomb blockade just reflects how steep is your gradient. So in principle, if you have a very steep gradient, the single electron features will follow each other very closely. And in particular, you could have resolution which is much better than the maximum. The separation between the features will be much better than the possible resolution given by the size of the quantum dot. So the thing to watch for is the separation between those hilltops which are marked by concentric single electron features. And we see that most of the features we have seen so far have a lateral separation of about half a micron or so. So the size of the quantum dot is slightly smaller than that. We sometimes observe features on the scale of down to 100 nanometers, but there are not that many of those features. So it's not a strong statement, but statistically the feeling is that random potential is mostly fairly long range with a typical lateral scale of 500 nanometers, which is much larger than, say, the spacer widths between the electron gas and the donor layer. So perhaps the random potential is partially screened by residual electrons left in the donor layer. It should be just the spacer widths. There were a number of works on that, in particular efforts had several works around 90s. And what you find is basically you have all possible components in the layer of impurities. You have all possible spatial components of the random potential, which is then filtered away as you go from the donor layer to the electron gas. And it is they are just exponentially suppressed, and you expect the random potential to have a typical lateral scale of a spacer widths, maybe a small numerical factor of the order of one. Now that would be in our case about 50 nanometers. What we observe is mostly about a few hundred nanometers. Now, we know from magnetic field estimates that the size of the dot should be around at most 300 nanometers. Now, we know that from the magnetic field experiment, we also sometimes see features which correspond to fairly sharp bumps in the plane of the two-dimensional electron gas. So sometimes you would have features which show up only on a short scale, like in this very region. Some of the features show up additional small bumps that corresponds to some spike in the potential. And that gives us, again, a feeling that overall our resolution is about the size of this feature. But we do not see that many features on that scale. Mostly we see features separated by larger distances of the order of half a micron or more.
Okay.
Oh, it's around 5×10^12 per centimeter squared. So, typical one.
It seems like the phenomenology could also be described by capacitance fluctuations to the tip. I mean,
yes.
The assumption that the capacitance to the tip is totally constant and everything is due to fluctuations in the energy, could have capacitance
fluctuations.
So there's some way of showing that
not what's
happening?
Yes. Thanks for this question. I've been never asked that, although we have an argument against that. So you might have a layer of dirt on the sample, for example, produced by lithography, which would result in variations of your capacitance signal that would result in similar shifts of single electron peaks just because your capacitance changes. Now, looking how different as how much voltage, say, need to apply at different locations, you could rule out those large variations of capacitance. To see what we have, sometimes we would see single electron features at one location, say at half volt, and at different locations they would show up at volt. So you need a variation of capacitance of the order factor of 2. To do that, you need quite a layer of whatever we have. Now, we have characterized the sample both at low temperatures just by measuring capacitance at zero field, and you see that capacitance is completely flat. Also, we know from imaging the sample at room temperature that it is clean and flat, and there are no you know, no residues on the surface. So I don't think variations of capacitance are as a cause of the features which we observe, although if they would look the same. Okay. I think I have just last view graph before the conclusion, and that is to compare nu equals 2 and nu equals 1 features. I've been mostly talking about nu equals 1 because the single electron features are much better, much better observed. But we see that as we go from nu equals 1 to twice smaller field, we see some of the features which are still there. Some of the measurements, we could see the single electron peak somewhat better, but we obviously see that we still have a fingerprint of the same random potential. And due to some reason, the single electron features are much more smeared. And we expect that, we think that the reason for this difference is a much suppressed tunneling barrier that we have at nu equals 2. So if you go to nu equals 1, we have the exchange-enhanced Zeeman splitting, and electrons in the quantum dot and electrons in the leads are fairly spin polarized. So for electron to tunnel out, it needs to flip its spin, a process which should be quite suppressed at in Gallimard-Sonnet in two-dimensional electron gas. Now at nu equals 1, the exchange enhancement is gone, and electrons in the quantum dot and in the leads should be spin unpolarized, which should allow them to tunnel out much more easily. So increased tunneling rate just smears the Coulomb blockade pattern. To sum it up, we have created what we call a mobile quantum dot inside the quantum Hall liquid, and we have used that as a single potential sensor electrometer with a single electron sensitivity. And also the experiment is an example of what now becomes known as a scanning gating microscopy, where the scanning tip is used by itself to change the local electron density in a sample and to observe the induced changes. Thanks. From the density variations that we measure, and we could estimate the density gradients from the change in the electrostatic potential we measure times the lateral scale, and that is typically much smaller than the gradients produced by the tip. So the picture that I have in mind is of a very flat potential and a fairly deep well created by the scanning tip in the middle. So a picture would be of something like that, plus perhaps this very deep well. So the presence of this small background gradient is negligible compared to the gradient created by the tip. So the scales here would be this 500 nanometers, here it would be 100 nanometers, and the depth here is a very small fraction of electron density, while here it is a significant fraction of electron density. So the well is deep and narrow. Yes, I think that it is possible that the quantum dot wobbles against the tip as we add electrons, but that probably would be reflected just in the change of the amplitude of the peaks. And you have seen the typical signals do not look are particularly pretty. They do not look quite as the usual Coulomb blockade, perhaps because the tunneling barriers are, you know, in this case created by the incompressible strip, so they're not within our control, and probably they're fairly open. So the Coulomb blockade is observed only some ripples on the background. So what I'm saying, if the quantum dot is now in addition moving each time I add an electron, that would result in change of the Coulomb blockade peak, which is by itself fairly, you know, they have different height and they're sitting on the background. That would not be something I can notice. Yes?
Can you get two concentric stripes?
That would require practically too large of a voltage. That would result in some charge transfer between electrons and donor layer, and that would haven't worked. Let me what I can say is that we sometimes see this Coulomb blockade as I've shown something like that. Roughly, that would be very open. Yeah. Open. Yeah. There is just technically a problem with this measurement because experimentally, when the scanning tip is sitting on the same location for a long time, you start to have some induced long time changes in the sample. So then you can scan the same region and you see that it now looks differently. So the picture actually has additional upturn here. The capacitance is first fairly high when there is no dot and you have compressible liquid everywhere. Then capacitance gets suppressed when you have exactly incompressible region under the scanning tip. So those are the Coulomb blockade peaks, and I would say that it looks like they are broadened most probably by the tunneling, by fairly high tunneling rate. In some other cases, we would see few peaks that are separated by fairly sizable valleys. Now, in that case, again, we don't know whether their width is given by whether they're broadened due to high tunneling rate or their width is given by temperature. We cannot close the tunneling barrier and check how does the width of the height of peaks behave. So in principle, that seems to be a question not for the scanning measurement. We could realize a sample of a similar geometry just by regular lithographic means and try to study the property of tunneling through the incompressible strip as we change some parameters. Say we have samples with different widths of the tunneling barrier and so on. So I guess this data have fairly obvious limitations on what it. That's again not easy to do with scanning measurement because you have fairly obvious changes in the tip to sample position. That seems to be an experiment to be done with a robust lithographically defined sample. And you know, it's obvious that here we do not extract any position sensitive information. So. Only what you've seen. I think there are two different things to try to measure. One is to create the quantum dot not inside the quantum hole liquid. You could, in principle, have a vertical sample where a tunneling rate is given by vertical tunneling barrier. And then you could scan this quantum dot knowing the tunneling rate is constant. You could tune this tunneling rate to have it fairly narrow peaks, and then you could study the random potential, perhaps a more boring sample where you would have no electron gas, but probably you would have more easily results more easy to understand. And then there is a question of how this object behaves in terms of tunneling rate through the incompressible strip at different filling factors, odd filling factors versus integer filling factors, and also how this charge quantization in this dot, whether its Coulomb blockade is exactly identical to usual quantum dots, and the only difference is just the property of the tunneling barrier, or there is difference in Coulomb blockade as well.
I'll make the Ned's first question. Maybe you should worry not only about surface contamination effect on the thickness, but on the surface layer. If there is some the polar molecules on the surface, they could give you quite a large positive effect. So this is something that maybe the only way to check is by printing the surface and seeing whether that's equivalent to that.
I could tell the following. So one thing that in terms of characterization was done, you could stick the sample before the gate is created on the surface in AFM and see what is the layer of organic contaminants you possibly get due to lithography. And that is less than, say, 30 angstrom. So it's really negligible compared to the thickness of the electron gas. Also, you could see how your capacitance signal at low temperatures, so more or less exactly the same conditions as experiment, just the difference would be zero magnetic field, looks like. And the capacitance is completely flat. So you would see some variations of capacitance. And to have those features due to just variation in capacitance, you would need really large variations in capacitance, because sometimes you need twice larger voltage in one position than in the other. That would mean you need twice different capacitance in those regions, and it's not the case.
Okay. No further questions. Let's thank the speaker again.